All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio. It's a Friday, December 9th. I'm Pat Kreitlow, along with Aaron Zommers. And coming up this hour, Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kia Vakil. Also, Mark Jacob, a former editor with the Chicago Tribune and Chicago Sun-Times. And Dan Schumacher, guest sportscaster, whose day job is athletic director at UW-Eau Claire. If you'd like to reach us, 715-388-7155 or radio at upnorthnewswi.com. As noted last week, there will be a vacancy. There is now a vacancy in the state Senate here in Wisconsin with Alberta Darling's announcement that she is retiring. There are, I think, three or four Republicans now who are looking to run the race. And on Wednesday, the first Democrat announced, Jody Habish-Sinikin, announced her intention to run for the 8th State Senate District seat in the Milwaukee suburbs. She is seeking to be the first Democrat to hold that seat since Joseph Czarnecki in 1992. Sinikin says that it would be a privilege to represent the 8th. As someone who has lived and worked in the district most of her life, she's committed to creating opportunities that foster a strong sense of community and ensure open dialogue between residents and myself. She grew up in Fox Point, attended Nicolay High School. After college and law school, she and her husband, Dan Sinikin, who was born and raised in Whitefish Bay, moved back to Wisconsin in 1995, living both in Bayside and River Hills over the next 16 years while they raised their four children. They currently reside in Whitefish Bay. Jody is a graduate of the University of Michigan and Harvard Law School and is a practicing attorney specializing in environmental law and policy. So for a time there, when State Representative Deb Andraka said that she was not going to run for that seat, there was concern whether a Democratic candidate could be found. It is a the district since redistricting. It is still I don't know if this is the right term. I'd say it's heavily lean Republican, meaning it's not solid Republican by any stretch. And in fact, in every election cycle over the past 10 years, the Democratic share of the vote has gone up higher and higher. So it's not a toss-up district either. It will take some work, but it is not impossible by any stretch of the imagination if Democrats want to take that seat. If one of the Republicans takes it, then Republicans will in fact have a supermajority in the state Senate and could do things like, you know, impeach certain state officials on a whim if they felt like that. So needless to say, the stakes in this race are rather high. One of the Republicans running in that district is State Assembly Rep Janelle Branchen, the, I think, now former chair of the Assembly Elections Committee, the conspiracy theorist who has either been supportive of or in cahoots with people who fraudulently obtained absentee ballots as some way of proving there's something wrong with the system when all they proved is that they fraudulently obtained ballots and are now going to pay some kind of a price for it. So Janelle Branchen thought that Robin Voss wasn't right-wing enough for her and Trump and other Trump supporters. So she supported the person who was running against Robin Voss in the Republican primary in his district in Racine County. Voss won narrowly, which always reminds us, if you aim for the king, you dare not miss. And so Janelle Branchen has been booted out of the Assembly Republican caucus as somebody untrustworthy. So she can't even sit in a closed door meeting with her fellow Assembly Republicans to plot out legislative strategy or other things. So she's hoping to trade that in and be part of the Senate Republican caucus and win this state Senate seat. Although it does make me wonder if she'd be any more welcome over there. And of course, to do that, again, she'd have to win a primary, which is going to happen on the Republican side. There will be multiple candidates over there. The elections and the outcome of them have led some Republicans to question whether they should continue following Donald Trump and others who have been speaking out against mail-in voting and early voting. You might recall that in the Georgia Senate runoff, Republicans met the reality of giving Democrats a head start that they could not overcome. According to tallies from the Georgia Secretary of State, Democratic Senator Raphael Warnock built a lead of more than 320,000 votes before the sun came up on Tuesday, Election Day. He topped Republican Herschel Walker by an almost 2-to-1 ratio in mailed ballots. So even with Walker gaining more votes on Election Day, he still lost by nearly 97,000 votes. Republicans are of one of two minds here. Either they're buying into the phony fraud claims from Trump and saying that there's something suspicious and wrong with mail-in voting and early voting, or they're not going that far and they're trying to make it sound like, well, Election Day should just be a day and a single day and you should show up. And if you can't show up, then you don't get to vote. And that was the attitude for, you know, an amount of decades until the realities of Americans' lives set in, that people don't have work or living situations that necessarily allow them to stand in a long line on Election Day. So we've done a great job in this country of making voting easier, more accessible, more convenient for those who are legally eligible to vote. Republicans, I think, thought they could somehow wish it away or undermine the system in some other form, and it didn't work yet again, as they found out in Georgia. So we may see a change in tactics. Might even see the drop boxes come back before too much longer here in Wisconsin. More after this. This is Up North News Radio. Kia McKeel joins us right now from California. Kia, hello.
Hi, Pat. Thanks for having me.
Will things be noticeably different in the Senate with 51 Democrats instead of a 50-50 split?
Yeah, I think you're going to see some differences. It'll mean Biden will nominate more judges that will help workers and families over the next few decades. It'll mean it's more likely that legislation gets passed and is not as watered down by Joe Manchin. And frankly, in the long run, it'll mean Democrats have a little more wiggle room to retain a majority in 2024 when they have a much more difficult Senate map to defend.
So did Georgia turn out the way that it did? Is it solely a case of a flawed candidate? Was there Trump baggage on this as well? Or, you know, what else did you really see as you watched the numbers come in on Tuesday night?
Yeah, I think it's a couple things, most of which being just a really, really poor candidate. Herschel Walker has more controversies and baggage than maybe any Senate candidate in my lifetime, which is not that long, all things considered. But, you know, this is a guy who paid for abortions while wanting to ban abortion, held a gun to his ex-wife's head, had his own son, you know, publicly disowning him, who's a conservative, his son. Compared vampires and zombies, like it just goes on and on. And he was facing one of the strongest candidates Democrats have ever run, I think, in the Senate, and Raphael Warnock, who, you know, is a pastor and fairly progressive for a state like Georgia. And so, you know, the difference in candidate quality was pretty clear. You know, Republicans won every other statewide office in Georgia except the Senate race, and none of the others were particularly close. So Warnock outperformed other Democrats by anywhere between like 7 to 10 points. But I think the second thing is, I mean, the Trump factor. I think Trump endorsed Herschel Walker, and Trump is still this giant anchor on the party with independent voters. And when he is heavily involved in endorsing someone or really campaigning for them, or they're so tied up with him, it really hurts them with voters.
What becomes then of this Republican Party that has watched Trump do as much damage as has been done already? We often refer to the autopsy of 2012 and how in the end, while that looked like a valid path, you know, back to power, Republicans decided to take an entirely different path altogether. So much for introspection. Is there a chance we'll see any of that? Or do we all just move the circus from 2022 into how many Republicans are going to get into the presidential nominating process for 2024 and do pretty much nothing differently?
It's a really good question. I mean, I think you see a lot of Republican politicians and pundits and sort of mainstream media political figures. They are, you know, they want to, they're criticizing, you know, they want Trump to go away. Like, they would love for him to go away. Like, Republicans like Chris Christie or, you know, Mitch McConnell and these sorts of folks. But Trump's not going to go away. He's been on the scene for 7 years at a minimum, and he's not going to change. He's not going to suddenly become disciplined. And so I think that's the problem Republicans have right now, is he is by far their most popular figure. And even in the polls where he's, you know, Ron DeSantis is a little more competitive with him, he's still leading or pretty close to tied. And that's before a campaign even starts. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Republican elites may want to move on from him and may think that that's going to be possible, but the voters aren't showing that yet. Mm-hmm. He's got a stranglehold over a big chunk of the base, and it's not big enough to win general elections is the problem.
And you know, Trump isn't making things any easier for the party. I mean, you would put together a graphic for Up North News of, you know, explaining what all Trump has done just since he announced. And I almost wonder if you want to keep that same graphic. And as he does more things, you just keep adding them. And the font size on the words will have to get smaller and smaller with each additional one. But right now you can read the graphic on what he's done just in the past couple of weeks.
Yeah, and let's be clear, that graphic excludes a lot of other things that have also happened. But, you know, it talks about how he hosted neo-Nazis at his Mar-a-Lago club with Kanye West and Nick Fuentes for dinner. You know, he expressed sympathy for January 6th insurrectionists. His company was just charged or convicted of tax fraud. And, you know, he called for the termination of the Constitution because of, you know, the 2020 election. So, and other things have happened. You know, there's been court rulings about his taxes, and he's had a terrible rollout. And he basically announced and then vanished to his basement and just posts, or Mar-a-Lago, and posts on Truth Social like everyone's crazy uncle. And, you know, I'm sure, you know what, we'll see what happens. He holds a grudge like no one else. And he will not go away quietly. Even if he were to somehow be defeated in a primary, I have every confidence he would burn it to the ground, the Republican Party, before he lets them move on from him. And so it's going to be really interesting. And I don't know. I mean, this is the Republicans made the deal with the devil, and it's hurting them. And, you know, they got the Supreme Court seats and an abortion ban. So, you know, some people might say it's worth it, but he's clearly, you know, hurting them electorally.
Oh, without a doubt. And look, with Republicans taking over the House, however narrowly, they're still there. So even though they all loved to bring up inflation over the past year, still haven't seen a plan on it, still won't. And yet another story that was worked on recently was about the role that, you know, corporate greed is playing in this, in exorbitant price hikes on things, that because now it's just so much easier to just blame inflation rather than what, you know, those companies are doing individually. So while there may not be action about it, it certainly shouldn't stop us from talking about, you know, the role of who's really responsible for making things harder to afford.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, let's be clear, it's not all corporations and their right. greed, but they're a huge part of it. You know, the war in Ukraine is playing a role. The pandemic's a huge factor, but, you know, you can't see companies like Exxon, Shell, Chevron making comical profits that, like, the brain can't even understand, that are record profits. And then look, and you're paying $3, $4, $5, $6 a gallon where I am in California is what the cost was over the summer, and still way more above average in other states. And think that greed isn't a factor. Like, it just is. That doesn't compute. And, you know, you have food grocery companies making enormous sums. You have Albertsons and Kroger trying to merge. You know, corporate greed is a huge problem in the U.S. And there's a lot of reasons for that. And, you know, the FTC and certain agencies are trying to fight back. But really, it's on Congress to act. And that's obviously not going to happen anytime soon. But as you said, it's still worth calling it out for what it is.
Another story that we've put out lately is about the need for an updated ID card. But the did I see right? The government has delayed yet again the way that they're rolling out the Real ID program.
Yeah, they did. So the Real ID is this, you know, kind of updated, more secure driver's license or state ID card that anyone who wants to travel domestically is going to need to show. It was supposed to go into effect next May in 2023, but the federal government announced this week that they're delaying it by 2 years to 2025. And the reason for that is only about 50% of IDs currently in circulation are Real ID compliant. And so, you know, this ID Act is the result of a post 9/11 law that's, you know, intended to make air travel more secure. But it's a hassle to implement. It's a hassle for people to get their Real IDs. And so the uptake has been really, really slow. And so rather than have this, you know, potential disaster next summer when a lot of people who want to fly can't fly, they're delaying in 2 years. And so that'll give people more time to get up to date with the Real ID standards.
Okay, let's get back to Congress for a sec here, because first off, I'm wondering if much can be done in any kind of a lame duck session. I mean, there's rumors that there's a, you know, an immigration reform agreement out there. There's talk about trying to act on the debt ceiling now so Republicans can't hold it hostage when they take control of the House. Does any of that seem feasible to hope for before the end of the year, or are we faced with going another term without immigration reform, and are we facing a potential government shutdown, you know, if the debt ceiling isn't raised?
Yeah, I mean, on the immigration compromise, I'm extremely skeptical that that's going to happen, because it requires 10 Republicans to say yes, and immigration is one of the most animating causes of their base. You know, banning immigrants, whether legal or illegal, you know, they are, the Republican base is extremely, extremely anti-immigration. And this bill would, you know, give citizenship to dreamers or a pathway to 2 million dreamers. And I think, you know, it's possible there's 10 Republicans for it. There were 10 Republicans to protect same-sex marriages and pass a couple, you know, some very moderate gun safety legislation this summer. But I would be surprised. And on the, you know, the debt ceiling, you know, Democrats could do that on their own in theory. You know, they could do it through reconciliation, which is this process that only requires 50 votes. But you have Joe Manchin, who
yes,
wants everything to be bipartisan, and his whole brand is making things difficult for every other Democrat in his party. And he's, you know, so I think that's unlikely as well. Also, frankly, because there's less than a month left in the session and reconciliation can take some time. So unfortunately, that has the effect of essentially handing Republicans in the House a loaded gun to point at the global economy with the debt ceiling fight next year.
Yay. All right. Last thing I've been asking people about 2022, not counting results that you liked or didn't like. What was it about the year? We're looking for something positive. What was something pleasant, something you enjoyed covering, something that uplifted your spirits? What's something good we can say about all the work or everything that you watched in the 2022 year that was?
I think for me, the thing that was most relieving or optimistic or inspiring was watching and interviewing people, voters, activists, you know, election officials who showed up and defended democracy this year. You know, whether or not, you know, I would love for us to get to back to a place where the difference between Republicans and Democrats is, you know, taxes and social policy, which are extremely important issues, but not whether or not votes should count. And I would love, and I think this year got us closer to that, because you had the election deniers completely fall on their faces. You had Trump endorsed candidates fall on their faces. You had pro-democracy candidates win pretty much everywhere where there's competitive races. You know, obviously in deep red states, a lot of them still won, which is a problem. But in the states that really decide the balance of power, you know, democracy won out. And I think that's a huge relief. And it doesn't mean we're out of the woods. It doesn't mean that, you know, the authoritarian drift of the Republican Party is over or is going to suddenly reverse, but it was dealt a major blow. You know, they see that trying to upend democracy and overturn elections is electoral poison. And so if that continues, you know, I feel a lot better coming out of 2022 than I did coming into it.
Courier News International correspondent Kia Vakil in an interview that, if you couldn't already tell, was taped yesterday afternoon before the early morning news that Kyrsten Sinema was leaving the Democratic Party, again, throwing another wrench into the operations of your United States Congress. We'll talk to Mark Jacob on the other side of the break here on Up North News Radio.
Follow Up North News online anytime. Search Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for Up North News WI and our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com.
.com 7:33 on this Friday morning, December 9th. This is Up North News Radio. Pat Kreitlow here, Mark Jacob over there in Chicago. And Mark and I talk about the weekend headlines, sometimes about media coverage, whether they focus on the big issues or not. So, Mark, let's start with coverage of one of the big issues. Are you finally going to tell us what is on Hunter Biden's laptop?
I think we'll be talking about it forever, of course. It's you know, I mean, we're talking about Hillary's email still. I mean, you still had Sean Hannity still brings that up. And they really are kind of similar things. You know, the thing about, Pat, about the Hunter Biden case is he's being investigated right now. And if he did anything wrong, every progressive I talk to says, if he did anything wrong, let the law handle him. You know, let him, you know, no one's saying it's a witch hunt. No one's, I mean, the legal aspect of it, at least. No one's saying that. No one's saying, you know, that there's nothing to, who knows? Let's look into the facts and let's let the law take its course. And let's not, you know, the thing about it, the difference between the Republican and Democratic parties right now is the Republicans want to cover up and excuse their misconduct. The Democrats, you know, try to deal with it. I mean, you look at Andrew Cuomo, for example. I mean,
Al Franken back in the day, you know, right. there's just not a lot of the, oh, it's, you know, when there is a defense, it's usually because there is something defensible. But when there's something indefensible, you don't play politics with it. Or, you know, I like the way you put it. Hunter Biden's laptop isn't going to help your aunt pay for her insulin.
Right. And it's what they're talking about. I mean, that was so telling. The Republicans take the House of Representatives barely, and the first thing they do is hold a press conference about Hunter Biden's laptop. And then they don't want and reporters try to ask questions. They say, well, we want to stick to the laptop, you know, in this thing. Well, why? I mean, do you see the hordes of people like saying laptop, laptop? I mean, are they marching in the streets over the laptop? I don't think so. I think people would actually like to see something get done. They'd like to see, you know, I think people would like to see fewer poor kids around, you know, more kids lifted out of poverty. Wouldn't that be a fun exercise now instead of holding interminable hearings over Hunter's laptop?
It's a theme that we had this morning, was just getting the work done. And earlier we talked about the Respect for Marriage Act and how Tammy Baldwin saw a little bit more support among House Republicans, saw the opportunity, ran with it, and said, right, how about if we just get this done and not have a show vote, not use it as a wedge in an election year, and actually accomplish it? And if we could have that kind of, you know, Midwestern work ethic from more of our Midwestern representatives, God, imagine what we could get done, you know?
Yeah. But speaking of Midwestern and lack of work ethic, Jim Jordan is going to be like chairman
of judiciary.
Judiciary. Oh. You know, making sure that our laws are applied fairly. And, you know, Jim Jordan doesn't know much about laws because he never passes any. I mean, that's his whole shtick are these, you know, outraged, you know, rants at committee hearings and stuff like that. I mean, he doesn't pass legislation. He's not there to pass legislation. He's there because that's where the cameras are.
Right.
I mean, and I understand people who don't, you know, buy the whole Democratic thing on all the issues. And, you know, frankly, I don't on some of the issues either. I mean, it's like I think you need to pick and choose. And I think I'm an independent. I look at things like that. But what does the Republican Party stand for right now? I mean, what are they trying to get done? And the answer is nothing. They don't want anything. They're just there to be there because that's where the donors are. That's where the lobbyists are. That's where the limos are. That's where the cocktail parties are. And it's and don't people want more? I mean, don't people want more from their government than just grandstanding idiots like Jim Jordan?
No, grandstanding is apparently still something you can make a buck or two off of, I guess. The day yesterday was spent with folks trying to undermine the good news that Brittany Griner was being released after being held essentially as a kidnap victim, you know, in Russia for all these many months. And with folks saying, well, this is terrible for Biden because, and then they talk about Paul Whelan, somebody whose name they probably did not know off the top of their head before the attacks started coming in yesterday.
Right. It's like, I mean, frankly, it's a lot like fentanyl. You know, talk about things that people didn't talk about until it was politically advantageous. These countries had a fentanyl problem for decades. And some people were talking about it, but the Republicans weren't. They didn't, you know, give a crap about it until they wanted to tie it into the border issue. And it's, again, it's a, you know, I'm not saying it's not a real problem. It's a real problem, and it's something we need to try to deal with. But this is like, you know, flavor of the month, you know, now I suddenly care kind of stuff is just crazy. And I also, you know, Pat, I think that, you know, there's a perfectly rational discussion to be had over, well, did the U.S. get too much? Did it not get enough? Whatever. But I think most American people want the government to try to, you know, rescue Americans overseas when they get into trouble whenever possible. And instead of there was really zero joy in Fox News and in that whole, you know, right wing ecosystem. I mean, there was not a second of joy. It was straight to outrage. Oh my God, you're letting a bad guy go. Of course you're letting a bad guy go, because that's the only way you get anyone back. And then Paul Whelan, who, yeah, you're right, they don't care about Paul Whelan. They just don't. And they don't care about Brittany Griner too. And it's some, you know, you get this whole vibe also they got the LGBTQ, they got the person back, they got the gay person back. They didn't get, the ex-Marine back. You know, it's like we don't care about all Americans, which we should, and we do.
Right.
And, you know, so. I guess that's almost everything is political in American life right now, almost everything. But I mean, this doesn't have to be. I mean, this could just be, oh my gosh, this woman went through this horrible problem. You know, 10 months in a Russian jail is not something that I would relish. And thank goodness she's home. I mean, just zero joy though on the right, zero joy.
No. There was an election in Georgia, bringing the midterm cycle to a close finally. And while folks are rightfully proud of Reverend Warnock for coming out on top, it was a close race. And once again, when you see the breakdown, it should remind every, you know, white progressive who wants to get a little too full of themselves to be reminded that 71% of white men voted for Herschel Walker and 54% of white women voted for Herschel Walker with his record. So there is no time to rest on laurels. There's still a lot of work to be done out there.
Yeah, there's just a lot of lockstep going on. And you try to figure that out. And I'm not sure. I think there's kind of this active ignorance of the facts that you know, that the voters and the Republican voters in Georgia had to go through, where they, all right, I'm going to vote for the Republican. I know he's flawed. I don't want to hear about it. I don't want to hear anything. I don't want to hear anything. Because there was so much. It was such a parade of terribleness with this guy. I mean, this guy. But, I mean, I just try to. It's very difficult to crawl in the minds of a Georgia Republican. I wouldn't, you know, think that I could actually do that. But I've been trying to. I've been trying to figure out, you know, why do you really. I mean, the guy put a gun to his wife's head and threatened to blow her brains out. I mean, the guy. He kept kids secret, his own children. He kept a secret and hid them from the media and has virtually ignored them, mm-hmm. You know, a package once a year or something like that. I mean, the guy is not, and he's also not all there. I mean, he's a child, you know, with this whole vampires and werewolves thing. So, and also, and Warnock, the thing about it is, you know, I remember the old days, when in Louisiana, where David Duke was running against Edwin Edwards, you know, and everyone knew Edwards was crooked, and there were bumper stickers, you know, and slogans saying, you know, vote for the crook, not the racist. And, you know, and so I get that. I get having bad decisions and picking a bad guy because he's less bad than the other person. But that's not what Georgia was about. I mean, Raphael Warnock's a very impressive guy. I mean, well-spoken and well, you know, hardworking, says what he means. I think he's very impressive. And so, so this wasn't like, oh my gosh, we can't vote for Raphael Warnock because we don't. It was an active decision to vote for somebody who's maybe one of the most, clearly is one of the most unqualified candidates to run for the United States Senate in recent memory.
Well, we certainly saw what happened when one of the most qualified candidates ran for president in 2016 and how well that worked out. So, like I said, the work always goes on. I liked your note on Tuesday night when people were watching the needle on the New York Times, you know, election forecast. And look, I was watching TV as the votes were being tabulated. And sometimes, you know, Walker was up and sometimes Warnock was up and sometimes Walker was up. And I know we love sports in this country, but it seems like we once again have to remind people that you're not watching something ongoing. All the votes have been cast. It's just the pace at which they're being counted. You advocated for not even having these needles.
Well, I mean, what is the purpose of the needle on, well, it's purpose period, but what is the purpose on election night? We're counting votes. And so we need a prediction. And also the predictions have been so horribly wrong that just give it up, New York Times. Why are you doing this? And so for the listeners, if they're not sure what we're talking about, we're talking about the needle that says what's the chances that Warnock or, you know, Walker is going to get elected. And they had a needle, you know, with that moved based on the returns that said what is the chance they're going to get elected. Well, we're going to find out pretty soon. Let's just count the votes. You know, and the thing about last Tuesday is that they had to take it down. They like stopped it with a note above it that said because of data issues, we're looking into this. And so they didn't have it because they wanted to try to predict something that there was no point in predicting. We're just counting the votes. Let's just count the votes. It's not a prediction game. And it's not like they're just trying to hype up the drama. If they, you know, it's like when you see on TV when they have like a clock, you know, counting down when polls close and stuff like that. I mean, they're all these Hollywood tricks to make it seem more.
It is. Cool. It's just all about building the drama as opposed to count it, declare it. If you then have to recount it, that's fine. If you don't believe them, but you know, count it, declare it, be done with it. Mark, it has been a week since we have spoken. And this tells you something about the situation we're in. In the week since, what should have been the first thing we talked about and the entire time is going to be one of our last subjects. And that's a former president calling for the termination of the Constitution and most of national media going, oh, you know, that's just him. He, you know,
what? Yeah, he does that. That's just the way he talks.
And it's just so irresponsible in my mind. Not the comment, the lack of coverage of it. I mean, look, it just this week in Germany, they arrested 25 people who were plotting a coup. In Peru, they arrested the president who tried to stage a coup and keep himself in power. Other countries are protecting their democracy better than we are.
Well, that's the whole thing. I think there's this real misimpression in this country that we're immune to that kind of thing. And that, you know, nothing that bad will ever happen to us. And when you, I would think after January 6th that would not be an issue anymore, that people would realize something bad can happen to us. But there's still, I think, there are a lot of people who just think that everything's going to work out fine no matter what happens. And, you know, and it won't. And the thing that's also a lesson from history is that when bad people tell you they're going to do bad things, they try to do bad things. I mean, it's not like they're saying it just to say it. I mean, you've seen it so many times in world history that someone will say, well, I'm going to take over this country and, you know, I'm going to persecute this ethnic group. And then they do. And so this whole, you know, well, we need to, you know, terminate the Constitution. That should have been at the top of every newspaper front page. I mean, it should have. It didn't even make the front page.
No.
It just shows how, and it almost didn't even make anything. I mean, I kept on looking at the New York Times and the Washington Post that day. And Washington Post, like, lamely came up with some terrible story that turned into a
reaction. Oh, that the White House is criticizing it. That was
it. Yeah. So it's not news that the former president who's running for president again wants to scrap the Constitution and set it. And then, you know, a day or two later, he does this Truth Social thing where he says, I didn't say anything about that. I mean, the gaslighting is incredible.
In writing. Are you going to believe me or your lying eyes? I know. Exactly. Mark Jacob, thanks so much. Have a great weekend. Look forward to it next week.
All right. Talk to you later.
All right. Thanks so much. When we come back, we'll take a look at sports for the weekend here, starting with the stuff that's already happened. The University of Wisconsin Badgers volleyball team moving on in the NCAAs after this on Up North News Radio.
God in heaven, you know I love you.
So if it's Friday and Dan Schumacher's with us, we're going to get some Grateful Dead history lessons here. Is this a song or is this the forecast? Cold rain and snow.
That's why I picked the song, Pat. That's exactly why I picked the song. You asked me yesterday. I said cold rain and snow. Mm-hmm. That's about what's going to go on in our area and south of us. So perfect lead-in for the weekend.
Is that a big part of the song? Is it like their version of the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald, you know, or something
yes,
like that?
Yes, it is. It's about a bad storm in Southern California.
Well, look at that.
In the mountains. In Bigfoot. And it's actually set in Bigfoot County.
Okay.
In California regarding the mountains, the Sierras.
All right. I had a lucky guess. Yeah. Did you catch any of the Badgers last night?
The volleyball?
Yeah.
Yes. Actually, a little Cliff Clavin information. My cousin is the head coach of Penn State.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, look at you. What a nice connection.
Yeah. So, it was torn. You know, you want your family, your cousin to win, but.
Oh, sure.
But you
got to look at it as a win-win. Either way, you know, something good happens.
No doubt. Oh, yeah.
Well, they did take them to a fifth set. You know, after the Badgers took the first two sets, I thought, well, they're just going to slice right through here. But then Penn State came back and won the next two. And, you know, pretty soon it was game on.
Yeah, pretty exciting match. And the Badgers move on. And, you know, they're expected to do what they're doing. And they got a solid program. They had a lot of blocks last night. I mean, they really put
23-9.
They played high at the net, no doubt.
Oh, I was just so impressed. They're 16-0 at home this season, and this is the eighth year in a row the Badgers have reached the Elite Eight, and the defending national champions will take on Pitt tomorrow night, 7 at the Fieldhouse in Madison. That will be on ESPNU. Pitt defeated Florida at the Fieldhouse yesterday, 3-1. Marquette was in Texas, eliminated by them, 3-1. Texas plays Ohio State, who eliminated the Gophers down in Austin. And again, look, I'm much like the Olympics. I'm only an expert for like, you know, 2 weeks a year on a certain sport. So I'm only an expert right now in volleyball. But if you look at it, Pat,
the state of Wisconsin is so strong right now.
Oh, yeah.
From top to bottom. So you look at the Badgers, you look at Marquette.
Look at the Blue Golds.
The Blue Golds won it last year. We were in the NCAA tournament and got knocked out in the Sweet 16. You know, you got Carthage College in men's volleyball. They won the national championship. So the sport of volleyball is very strong right now in the state of Wisconsin.
You know, it has been for decades that Wisconsin TV stations would show both the boys and the girls state high school basketball tournaments, mm-hmm. and they get an audience. I'm kind of wondering if maybe they want to expand that a bit. Maybe we see, you know, volleyball and maybe some other sport. I mean, compared to what reality programming are you going to roll otherwise? Why not watch more of our young men and women, you know, competing
That's right.
like this?
Right on.
It would be pretty cool. But, you know, I was going to say again, I'm no expert, but boy, there just seems like a line when you look at the one seeds as they were taking on, say, the, you know, the four seeds, you can tell why they're where they are, the ability to block and hold that line. You know, the diving, the accuracy of the shots. I mean, it honestly, it reminds me of how poorly the U.S. men's soccer team did against the Netherlands. That, yeah, you're good at soccer, but you're not elite at soccer. And when you watch how European teams, when they pass the ball, it goes exactly where they want it to go.
Yeah. They were born with a soccer ball on their foot. So, you know, and the Netherlands, I picked the Netherlands to win, but I didn't think they were going to win 4-1.
No.
I thought it'd be a little bit closer.
Yep. Bucks are in Dallas tonight. Game starts at 9 o'clock on ESPN. Let's see, the Badger men's basketball team next plays Sunday down in Iowa, 5:30 start time on the Big Ten Network. Rams beat the Raiders on Thursday night football, 17-16. The Packers are on a
bye week. Wasn't that a good game? Did you watch that game at all?
No, I just saw the volleyball, and then I've got an early bedtime. So
all right, well, I got home.
What did I miss?
I got home from work. I had student meetings in the evening and got home at the right time. And Baker Mayfield, who just got signed by the Rams, I came in, put the TV on. It was 16-3. And in the fourth quarter, Baker Mayfield came in and threw a couple touchdowns and won 17-16.
Wow.
So, quite the story there. He just signed with the Rams 3 days ago.
Did he really? Now, does that mean we're going to start seeing progressive commercials with Baker Mayfield, but now the Rams stadium is his home?
Yeah, maybe his insurance commercials may come back now. I just don't know what jersey he's going to be wearing.
Exactly. I mean, the commercials were really funny at first, you know, yes, that he makes the stadium his home. But as he was continuing to, you know, not win games and not be successful, the commercials kind of lost their luster.
Yeah.
To me, I've always equated that kind of with Aaron Rodgers too. Once he started doing, he was on State Farm ads like every 2 minutes on TV. And I was like, you're spending a little too much time in front of the camera. Not enough time, you know, in the playbook maybe.
I thought maybe since he had that bad haircut for a while and he played that old Nicolas
Cage. That's it. It's a Samson and Delilah thing. We're blaming the haircut.
That's right. And, you know, the Grateful Dead have a song, Samson and Delilah.
No.
They do. You can play that next Friday, Pat.
Okay.
Samson and Delilah.
I will try to remember that. Are your Bears playing this weekend?
They're unwatchable right now, so I have not inquired. They're not. I think they're on a bye week as well with the Packers. So, which gives me a very free Sunday to enjoy the outdoors of northern Wisconsin.
Well, there you go. Although, as I know you, typically your Fridays and Saturdays are spent making the rounds. And I don't mean making the rounds of area watering holes. Not that there's anything wrong with that. But making the rounds of various Blue Gold sporting events, I would imagine you probably have one or two of those where you make an appearance.
Yep. Tonight we have gymnastics, our home opener for gymnastics. Tomorrow we have doubleheader at home in hockey. Big series for us in men's hockey versus our arch rival, Stevens Point. We play them at Point tonight, and then we're back at Hobbs tomorrow night. Last night in the WIAC in wrestling was a big showdown. It's a big week for three schools, us, lacrosse, and Whitewater. And we're ranked ninth in the country, and Whitewater was ranked eighth. And we beat them at Whitewater last night, 20-19. So, big win for the Blue Golds. And then we play lacrosse, or we have a meet wrestling match with lacrosse next Wednesday night on campus. And they're ranked fourth in the country. So if the Blue Golds can get a couple wins against these top 10 teams, we should move into the top five for wrestling. And this is the first time that the program, since it started in 1963, has ever been ranked in the top 10. Pretty proud of our wrestlers and our coach and the program, how it's come along. You know, the story goes is when I took this job, there was people that just wanted me to drop the program. There was only 13 kids on the program. Mm-hmm. Now we have close to 50 kids in the program, and we're a top 10 school, you know. And so, you know, you never know. You never know what happens, and the interest level, and a lot of sports peak and valley of roster sizes and interest. And we hit it the right time.
Well, I don't know how many – I don't remember the number, how many millions and millions of dollars – the UW is getting as part of that new Big Ten TV deal. But I think some of that ought to filter down to you and Point and some of these other schools as well.
The distribution was $47 million a school.
Wow. Okay.
That's why they brought in USC and UCLA. What people didn't realize, why did you go out to Rutgers? Why did you go get Maryland? And it's about money. The TV markets.
The answer is money. All right, Dan. Thanks so much. Have a great weekend.
Have a good weekend. Take care.
All right. Hey, remember, follow us all day long, upnorthnewswi.com, upnorthnewswi in the socials. That's it for today. Earl Ingram in Waukesha, Stephanie Miller in Madison, Todd Alba for everybody else along the Civic Media Radio Network. Have a great weekend. Goodbye.